It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger of The Athletic. Holy shit, what a game seven.
That was the most chaotic thing I've ever been through in my entire life.
So, like, I've been watching hockey a long time, right? Like, I'll be 33 this year. I started watching hockey. I'm old. Yeah. Like, we've already sworn enough on this podcast. It's going to be one of those. So I'll be 33 this year. Started watching hockey at the tender age of three because that's coincidentally when Wayne Gretzky was traded to the LA Kings from the Edmonton Oilers. I've been through Marty McSorley's illegal stick. I've been through the LA Kings being garbage for years. I've been through the 2012 run, the 2014 run. I've seen some things in hockey. That game seven was the craziest hockey game I've ever seen in my entire life. It was ridiculous.
I had colleagues from The Athletic that cover just other teams around the league that were messaging me the next day like, hope you enjoyed that because you might not get anything like that for the next three decades covering hockey.
Like I remember the skate in the crease and how big of a deal that was kind of after the fact. But like, dude,
there just wasn't social media back then. So like, I think that's a way bigger deal because it's in overtime of the cup final and the cup was handed out that night.
Yeah.
But there wasn't Twitter for everyone to complain and make memes. I would have enjoyed the memes of Hasek lying there.
All right, so a couple of things that we need to get to, because you were in San Jose for that game seven. I was at Lindo Mitrocon doing pre-intermission and post with Frank. And I want to ask you a couple of questions. We haven't been able to get to it since the series ended, and it took, honestly, it took like 2 or 3 days to just kind of come down from that, that adrenaline dump, really. Like, I can't underscore how crazy of a game that was and how it ended and just everything about it was ridiculous. And it really lived up to what the entire series was. Just larger than life, really ridiculous. And you can argue that like the hockey games in and of themselves weren't all that close. And you're right, they weren't until game six and game seven. But that is a classic series. And it's one that's going to live in Golden Knights lore for a long, long time.
For sure. Part of being a pro sports town, and I tried to say this after the game, but for understandable reasons, Golden Knights fans didn't want to hear it.
Nobody wanted to hear it, yeah.
But it's like, part of being a pro sports town is having your heart ripped out, thrown on the ground, and driven over by eight semi-trucks. That's literally why we watch sports, for that, right? I mean, and then every once in a while, unless you're a Boston fan, then you get it six times a year because that city's spoiled rotten. But everyone else that's not from Boston, you get one or two moments in your life where they win something and it's special. But the only reason those are so awesome is because of all the semis running over your heart the other 25 years. So this is one of those, and it's the first one ever in franchise history. Even losing the cup final, because at that point they were playing with house money. It would have been cool to win the cup. I don't think it was crushing. That loss in the cup final compared to how this unfolded and because it was to the Sharks. I completely agree with you when you say it's going to go down in Golden Knights like history because of it's the first time.
Yeah. It's to me, this is going to be the series with which every other really hard fought Golden Knights series is going to be measured against. Like it was a classic. And again, it's not that the games 1 through 5 were that close. It was, you had San Jose throwing their best punch in game one. You had Vegas adjusting and taking command of the series and Martin Jones imploding. And then you had Martin Jones losing himself after game four and finding himself for game five, game six, and game seven. And you can argue whether or not the Golden Knights did enough to get to him in game six. He didn't play all that great in game seven, except for when he needed to be.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, Martin Jones came up with saves when his team needed it in game six and game seven. And that's a far cry from what happened in games 2, 3, and four.
Yeah, and I think what overshadows the beginning of the series not being so competitive, like the games themselves were two-goal games, three-goal games, I think what overshadowed that was the trash-talking between the teams and Evander Kane going at Reeves, and then Reeves goes back, and then Thornton comes in, and then Couture says something, and then Pete DeBoer calls out Gerard Gallant, and then Gallant calls him a clown. So to me, even though you're right, the game six and game seven were amazing. The games before that were good, not great. But the trash talk and the just the animosity between the players kind of covered that up and made it feel entertaining from, like, I was entertained from game one to game seven.
Yeah, 100%. That was great. So here are the questions that I wanted to ask you. I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but we'll do it here now. When Cody Eakin was ejected and assessed a 5-minute major for a routine play off of a faceoff, did you feel in that moment, before San Jose went on the power play, before San Jose scored 7 seconds in to that power play, did you feel at all that the game was going to change?
No.
Really?
No. I was, even when it happened, when Eakin went off, Eakin didn't even argue with the referee, right? He just went straight off. No, didn't, and I even asked him afterwards, and he said, I didn't argue with him at all. And I think it's because Eakin thought the same thing that I did, and I think all the rest of the team thought the same thing. It's like, doesn't matter. 3-0, 10 minutes left, whatever. Like, whatever. Just call the penalty. No big deal.
So when did that change?
When it was 4-3.
So, even after the first goal, you didn't think?
They scored 6 seconds in, 7 seconds in. I was like, in my mind, I'm like, whatever. And then they scored to make it 3-2, and I was like, wow, that's crazy, but like, they're not going to score three. That's ridiculous. And then they scored the third one, and I was like, wow, this game is going to go to overtime. I can't believe they scored three. There's no way they're going to score a fourth. And then they did. Every time, I didn't believe the next one was going to happen. And it just kept happening. It was the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
So, leading into game seven, my wife and I had a long conversation about kind of planning the next couple of months. Like,
yeah.
What is it going to look like? What do we think we're going to be able to do as far as like kids' birthdays and stuff like that, right? So before game seven, I was talking to my wife. I'm like, listen, if they win tonight, I think they're going to play into June. You know what I mean? Like, if the Golden Knights
just
win
because
tonight,
of all the teams that had lost.
And I think they have a very good shot of playing into June.
Yeah.
If they lose tonight, clearly it's over, but I think that. So the entire game, I'm reconciling to myself that it's going to be a very busy next 2 weeks,
yep,
potentially 6 weeks, right? And all of a sudden this penalty gets called. And to be honest with you, I didn't see the play in real time. I saw Joe Pavelski lying on the ground, and then I saw a play go on for a while. I saw no referees call a penalty on the play, and then I saw Cody Eakin get ejected. And then you go to Twitter, you start to see what exactly happened. You start to realize how bad of a call it is. And then play finally resumes. Like, all of those things happened before the puck was dropped on the power play because there was so much shit to sort out, right?
Yeah.
Like, you start seeing just how badly these referees screwed up.
Yeah. Live in the arena, I saw the play happen. I saw Pavelski. I just happened to be looking at Pavelski when he fell. Like, I was watching him the whole way. And as soon as he hit the ground, I like audibly said, oh no,
yeah,
because he was out cold. Like, you could tell the second he hit the ground, he was out cold. So
right.
I was immediately, I didn't see the, like, I didn't know if Eakin's hit was legal or not. I just saw him go out and I was like, they need to stop play.
Yeah.
And then they did. And then we're seeing the replay. And at this time they're checking on him. Then they put Cody Eakin in the penalty box. Cody Eakin sit in the penalty box. We're watching the replay up in the press box. And I'm thinking, oh, there's no way that's a penalty. That's a terrible call. Like, right. I can't believe they called that.
Right.
And at this point, we're thinking it's a 2-minute. And I'm like, that's just a horrible call. And I didn't see their hands go up. How can you go back and call that off the replay? Then they go over and get Cody Eakin out of the box. And I'm like, and me and everyone in the press box are like, okay, cool. They realized we screwed up. This isn't a penalty. They're bringing him out. And so did Cody Eakin. Cody Eakin told me when they let me out of the box, they realized it wasn't a penalty.
Right.
And I started skating towards the bench, and then they called to him and they go, no, you're out of here. And they threw him out of the game. So they told Cody Eakin that it was to the head, which it wasn't.
Right.
They told Gerard Gallant that it was to the head, which it wasn't.
Yep.
They told Jonathan Marchessault, their explanation to Jonathan Marchessault was, it looked bad.
Okay.
So essentially, a person was hurt, so we need to penalize you.
Right.
Which is obviously not the way hockey rules are called. And, I mean, at this point, like, there's no point in arguing that it wasn't the right call because the NHL admitted it in about as many ways as possible. So
without actually, like, going out there and, you know, saying, hey, we screwed this up royally. Yeah. Like,
well, you apologize to McPhee. You apologize to Foley. You discontinue the referees from officiating in the playoffs.
All great things.
And if you criticize the referees, it's an automatic fine. Automatic fine if you criticize the officials. Now, that's if you say, I didn't like the officiating. That's an automatic fine.
Okay.
If you say, they're a fucking joke, like Jonathan Marchessault did, that's multiple fines. I thought he might owe the league money after his season check is over. And how many fines did Marchessault get?
Okay, great.
Not a dollar.
I get all that. But the fact that the NHL has not released a statement on this matter specifically is embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Like, the onus shouldn't be on George McPhee. The onus shouldn't be on Bill Foley at locker cleanout day to be like, hey guys, by the way, the NHL reached out and apologized to us. Like, grow some fucking balls. Go out there and say, hey, we screwed up. Our refs destroyed the outcome of a game.
I think the NHL is not happy that McPhee and Foley divulged that information to us.
Who cares?
I'm just saying that.
Well, that's the NHL's like, intention. They can be mad about it all.
The
they
NHL's
want to.
Intention was not to make a public apology. It was to make a private apology.
And for that, I'm eternally grateful for George McPhee and Bill Foley saying, "Screw it. Who cares?"
Yeah, they're clearly upset.
They should be.
Yeah, no, they should. It was egregious. It was a terrible call.
So I want to kind of circle back here. So the penalty gets called, the puck drops, 7 seconds later it's in the back of the net. I'm like, oh boy. Here we go.
It felt
like everything changed in that span of 7 seconds. Like, honestly, I just was sitting there and I remember looking over at Frank and I'm like, that's not good. That's not good.
Yeah.
And you could see it. Like, the players... That moment just screwed them up.
They looked lost.
I
thought Gallant should have called a timeout after the second goal, not the third.
Did he? So he called a timeout
after the third goal.
So here's the question.
But at that point, it's tied now.
So here's the question that I have. And not because I thought he'd win a challenge, but there was a little bit of contact with Marc-Andre Fleury as the second goal was scored. We have seen Gerard Gallant. We have heard from Gerard Gallant multiple times throughout this season where he says, you know what? If it's close, I'm going to do it. It's better than calling a timeout. It gets you more rest. It does this. It screws the momentum of the game. Like, why does he not do it then? Right there. Yeah. There's a little bit of contact. I don't think he's going to win the challenge, but at least it just quiets that building for a little bit.
Yeah, and it serves as the timeout. I'll tell you why, because he screwed up. I mean, he, and like, I can't blame him because I was in that atmosphere and I got, like, it was unreal just how the building was so deadly silent for the last hour of real time. Like, it was silent. The Sharks fans were, you could hear like an occasional Shark fan yell, "What are you doing? Your season's about to end." That was about all the noise you could hear in the SAPs. It was silent. And when the penalty gets called, they're still not excited. They're throwing shit on the ice.
Yeah.
They're throwing stuff on the ice.
Talk about that for
while their captain is on the ice bleeding and unconscious. And they're throwing stuff on the ice.
Have you seen or come across a more self-deluded fan base than the San Jose fan base?
They are extremely hostile. That's what I'll say about the Sharks. I have had very bad experiences over the last week. I honestly hope these teams never play each other again in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, but it's going to be like the next 3 years.
I'm not even kidding. I really, really don't want these teams to ever play again in the playoffs because that's how disturbing
this is worse.
The Sharks fan base is.
Literally
especially on Twitter and in the arena. Now, I'm sure there are plenty of
good Sharks fans.
But the ones in the arena on playoff games, the majority of them, and the high majority on Twitter are not fun to be around or near. So, anyways, they score that goal 7 seconds in, and it just was chaos. The building, it felt like the roof was going to fall.
It came across on TV for
sure. And Gallant, I think, now it's his, like the players were caught up in it, clearly. They have one of the best penalty kills in the league. They've had one of the best penalty kills all series, and they were you might as well have just not had players on the ice. They were completely useless. But they are caught up in the emotion. Gallant can't. He's on the bench. That's your job, is to not get caught up in that. And I think he did.
Yeah.
Because that's why he didn't challenge that goalie interference call. That's why he didn't call the timeout after the second goal. I think it was just chaos, and they got swept up in it.
Just the moment was too big.
Yeah. Or just not even too big, because they've been in bigger moments. I think, and you want to talk about big moments, like you pull the goalie, your season's on the line, and Marchessault scores. So I wouldn't say too big. I'd say it was just too crazy. Like, it was just something that no coach has ever been in that situation. And Gallant, I mean, when you think about it, he's relatively inexperienced. This is his fifth playoff series as a head coach in his life.
Yeah.
So it's like, even though he's an older coach and he's been an assistant for a while and he's had three jobs, those first two jobs, he never made the playoffs. Last year was his first playoff experience. So it's like, he's still relatively inexperienced, and he handled it poorly, I think. But so did the players, so did the refs. Everyone handled it poorly, except for the Sharks, and they took advantage.
Which is interesting, because when you see your captain go down like that, and in that scary of a play, I think conventional wisdom would have said that the Sharks team would have been like, let's just get this 7 minutes over. Let's get done. I'm ready. Like, let's just go. And they use it as motivation. And you got to give them credit. Like, as much as you want to talk about the referees affecting the outcome of a game, you have to give the Sharks credit for going out there and scoring four goals in 4 minutes.
Yep.
You've got to give them credit. Just like you have to give the Golden Knights credit for not just accepting that, for forcing overtime and having their chances to win the game in overtime. I mean, they had their chances. So
they were bad in the overtime, though.
They still got dominated. Had chances, but like,
yeah. I watched it back on TV because I didn't watch any of the overtime live, but
yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
So how hard is it to find Don Van Massenhoven?
I don't want to get too much into this on the record. The NHL was not very eager to speak to me game. So I'll say that. I'll say that the way San Jose's arena is constructed, that's another reason I hope these teams never play, because they have the worst arena on the face of the earth.
No, it's bad.
So we're up in the catwalk on our press box. Our press box is in the catwalk.
You're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah. And the NHL officials have another catwalk that's on the opposite side of the rink. On the opposite side of the ceiling of the roof of SAP Center. So the only way to get over there is to walk across a catwalk that's about 2 feet wide with rickety-ass railings over center ice, right over the middle of the rink. Like, what, I don't know, 500 feet down, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
That's
I'm really not afraid of heights, to be honest. Like, I do roller coasters. I went to the Grand Canyon. Like, heights don't bother me. But walking across this rickety-ass catwalk while live overtime is going on beneath me, so every time a puck gets cleared, every time a pass gets through, every time a shot on goal, the building is erupting and just shaking, and there's lights flashing up in the rafters where I'm walking. It was terrifying. So I had to keep walking back and forth across that thing during the overtime, trying to get a hold of Don Van Massenhoven, who was the series supervisor of officiating. I was named the pool reporter. So they don't let referees do scrums like players and coaches. They don't have to actually answer for their screw-ups. What they do is all the reporters from both sides, Sharks and Golden Knights, you name one pool reporter who speaks to the series supervisor and gets the explanation. So that was me. He wouldn't speak to me in person. He would only issue me a statement through a text. And then after multiple follow-ups, he would not answer questions or speak to me. So he gave me a, t- a, a statement that said nothing, that said we called a penalty for cross-checking.
We guessed.
And that's about it. So, yeah, I didn't watch the overtime live. I did see the goal. I saw the game-winning goal, but because I had sat down in my spot maybe like 2 minutes before that. I was really hoping for double overtime because it was just chaos. I'm running back and forth across this scaffolding, and the Golden Knights team employees were not happy with the call, and they were making sure I got a hold of the NHL, and it was just chaos, and I'm running back and forth in the press box. And honestly, I sit down, and there's like, what? There was only like 3 minutes left in the overtime, right?
I think it was under 2 minutes, or just over 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I sit down, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, okay, let's just get through this 3 minutes, 2 minutes left in overtime, and I can catch my breath, and then I can actually get back to covering this game.
Right.
And then, like, right as I sat down, they scored, and it was over. So it was like, and pick up all my crap and go downstairs. Like, it was chaos, man. That, like I said, that's the most chaotic thing I've ever been a part of, ever. Like, I've never been a part of anything like that.
So, putting a bow on this series, putting a bow on Game 7, putting a bow on, I guess, the Golden Knights season as a whole, what are your big takeaways from Round 1 versus San Jose?
These were two of the best teams in the NHL. And unfortunately for Vegas, when you suck for the first half of the season, first third of the season, you end up getting a Game 7 in San Jose in the first round, which is, this team's better than that. And they didn't have Mark Stone for the first three quarters of the season, so you take that. But to me, the story of this season is the Golden Knights were so inconsistent in the regular season that it cost them a extremely difficult first round matchup, and they lost. And it was a horrible call, but they were also up 3-1, and they lost those games. To me, if you would have been more consistent in the regular season and you played Colorado, or basically, to me, I think these are like the two top teams in the West. I think they would have won the majority of their matchups, but they played San Jose in San Jose, and that's a tough place to win.
Consistency is the word, right? Like, I look at this season, and you know, you go out in the first round, it sucks, but this is also a team that went 8-11-1 without Nate Schmidt. I mean, that's how they started their season. 8 wins and 20 tries is not, you know, you sit back and you look at that and you say, geez, how far this team came from starting the season as poorly as they did. And while you can look at that as an accomplishment, it's not going to feel like that to the players in that room. They look at what happened this year in the playoffs and they see an opportunity wasted.
Yeah, I will say this season is a disappointment.
Yeah,
for sure. There's no way to spin it. This season was disappointment.
No, and I agree with you too, because when you start off that badly and then you get yourself into a position where you're solidly in third place for over half of a season, you don't get to fall back on that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't get to fall back on, we weren't great to start the year, and that cost us down the stretch. Like, this team had plenty of opportunities to secure home ice advantage in the first round. They chose instead to try to get healthier. I don't think that that's the wrong choice.
No,
but I do think they could have done more with their stretch to end the season.
Yeah.
And they had a 3-1 lead.
I also think, just forget about how the season went. Just look at the talent on the roster. That is not out in the first round talent. That's a deep run in the cup playoffs talent.
And I fully believe this team will be better for it. Like, I think next season, the Golden Knights are going to have, they're going to feel like they have something to prove.
Yeah.
And we've seen what Gerard Gallant can do with that already.
Mm-hmm.
How's he going to do that? How's he going to make that better with the likes of Mark Stone feeling slighted, the likes of Max Pacioretty feeling slighted, Paul Stastny? I mean, those are three guys that came in here that didn't really understand what being a golden misfit was. You know what I mean? And now they feel like they had something stolen from them by the NHL. So I expect next year to be amazing for the Golden Knights. Just what the hell are they going to look like on the ice? That's the question. Yeah.
I think we can start off that conversation by going through the free agents.
Yeah, let's do it. And then we'll get to questions after that.
Yeah, I wrote my story for today. Ken at Sinbin did a story projecting it. I focus just on the UFAs and RFAs and who's going to be back and who's not going to be back. And we got a ton of audio from those guys on locker cleanout day where we got to ask those types of questions. So you want to just kind of go down the list and we'll both kind of give our thoughts on each guy?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So first on my list was Brandon Peary.
All right. My thoughts, he is not a Golden Knight next year.
If I had to rank them in my confidence, I would be the most confident in Peary, and it's that he's not going to be a Golden Knight. I'm more confident that he will not be a Golden Knight than any other player possibility this offseason.
Well, here's the thing with Brandon Peary. Like, he was hot when he first came up, he stuck because he was helping the team win. I think he's probably a 15 to 20 goal scorer, right? Like, he's right around there. Mm-hmm. How many teams in this league could use a guy like that?
Arizona doesn't even have one of those guys.
Right, exactly. So, like, you can find a spot. A team will be able to work in Brandon Peary. He's not so slow that he can't, you know, put himself in good positions defensively. I think that aspect of his game has gotten better. It's not great by any stretch, but I do think that there will be teams lining up to get Brandon Peary just to be an offensive threat.
Yeah.
And you put him on the power play, you tell him, don't do anything but shoot the puck. I think there'll be a spot for Brandon Peary to play a significant role on an NHL club.
Yeah, so the definitive quote for me from Peary was, he told us after on locker cleanout day, this is a deep group. I want to be a part of it, but it's about opportunity at the end of the day. That is about as clear as you can possibly be saying, there's no room for me here. I'm going to go somewhere where there's room. I followed that up by asking him, because last year he was a free agent and nobody signed him, and he ended up signing back with the Golden Knights. And a huge part of that, which he told me during the season, was the AHL team's in Chicago.
Right.
My wife lives in Chicago with my kid. I'd rather be in the NHL, but if I get sent down, it's a great option to get sent home to where I live in Chicago. So I asked him, when you're looking at your next contract, how much does that factor into it? Because you love to the situation, the AHL. And he answered, it makes sense for my family for sure, but my goal is to be in the NHL. That's what I want to do, and that's what I'm looking at. We'll see what happens.
Do you think there's any room for him with the Blackhawks?
Could be, yeah. They've got some cap space now. That would be probably his ideal situation, because then you get to be in the NHL and you get to be in Chicago, which is best for both worlds. But I honestly, there are 5, 6, 7 teams in the league that could use a 15 goal scorer.
Yeah, I agree. And
I think he gets the contract.
Imagine a scenario in which Brandon Peary is a Golden Knight next year.
I would be surprised. Yeah.
Next one.
Pierre-Edouard Belmar.
He's an interesting one.
Yes.
Because what you do with Belmar depends solely on what you do with Cody Eakin.
I completely agree.
And so to me, you can move on from Cody Eakin if what you're looking for in return on a trade is futures, draft picks.
Yeah. Prospects and picks. You can't take on any more salary.
And that's kind of the question. Is that what George McPhee wants to do? Is George McPhee looking to kind of restock that cupboard for future dates? If he is, then you have value in Cody Eakin. You can move him out. You can get picks, maybe a prospect, but I think you're probably at this point more concerned about picks because there's already a log jam pretty much everywhere, except for maybe at forward. But
yeah, and McPhee and McCrimmon have done such a phenomenal job drafting. I mean, you look at the draft picks, like Cody Glass, by all accounts, he killed it in juniors. He's playing well in AHL. He played well in world juniors. He's a great pick. Nick Suzuki, got your Max Pacioretty.
Yep.
That doesn't happen if he's not promising. Eric Brandstrom, got you Mark Stone.
Right.
They are nailing them. So if I'm McPhee and McCrimmon, give me picks because I'm smarter than you. In my mind, I can pick better than you can. Let me picks and let me get my prospects.
Cody Eakin's cap hit is
$3.75 million.
Right. So
that could be off. I just made that up.
You talked to Belmar. We talked to Belmar. He's made it very clear that if the Golden Knights offer him a contract, he's going to sign it.
Yeah, so here, let me just read it real quick. The quote that everyone tweeted out that kind of got people scared was, he said, it's not fun to have a year-to-year contract, so that's obviously not what I'm looking for. But we love it here, and we're a bunch of spoiled kids doing the best thing we can do in our lives because this organization, so you'd be a fool to want to leave. So he does say he doesn't want a year-to-year contract, but then he goes on to say, hey, I'm a French hockey player. I've played in shit rinks all over Europe that you wouldn't even believe how bad they are. I'm not going to be picky. So basically, I think the Golden Knights can offer Belmar pretty much the minimum.
Sure.
And he'll take it.
So here it is. Cody Eakin's 3.85.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So if you are able to trade Cody Eakin for some picks and you re-sign Belmar for
about $1 million,
yeah. You could even do it on a 2-year deal. So you've got a little bit more stability with him. You save yourself $2.8 million right there,
yeah.
Just on that contract alone.
And Belmar's nowhere near as good as Eakin. Yeah,
and you get picks.
Yeah, he's nowhere near as good as Eakin. Eakin scored 20 goals this year. Well, Belmar won't score 20 goals in the rest of his career.
Which is fine, but you're not asking Cody Eakin next year to be Cody Eakin this year. You're asking Cody Eakin to be Pierre-Édouard Belmar.
Yeah.
Like, Cody Eakin on the fourth line is going to look more like Pierre-Édouard Belmar did this year than he's going to look like Cody Eakin from
True,
last
he's
season.
Still way better, but I agree. And I think Belmar... especially when you're pressed against the cap, you can't pay a fourth line center $4 million.
And the question, I guess the big question is, you've got Eric Halla, who is penciled in right now, at least to me, and I'm sure to you, as third line center.
Yep.
Like, there's no spot, I don't think, for Eric Halla to be a part of the top six on this team.
Unless
right
there are... Injuries or like even an injury to a winger, I could see him being the guy that goes up to be a wing up there. But you're right. As if they're 100% healthy, there's no way he's in the top six.
So I guess the question is, how much salary does George McPhee need to clear in order to re-sign William Karlsson? And
a lot.
I know, right? And can that be done with a couple of minor moves like a Cody Eakin? Like a Ryan Reeves,
mm-hmm.
to bring in
Nick
some
Holden.
Draft picks, Nick Holden, right? Like, can the amount of salary required to sign William Karlsson be offset by minor moves, or does George McPhee have to do something a little bit major?
Trade Riley Smith or something crazy
exactly.
like that, yeah.
So to me, I feel like there's enough demand for Cody Eakin that George will be able to get something appreciable in return.
I agree.
And I also think that it makes sense to sign Pierre-Édouard Belmar because... You know what you need out of your fourth line. I don't think Cody Eakin at $3.85 million is the right answer there.
Yeah. No. So like you said from the very beginning, if Eakin gets traded, Belmar's back. If Eakin doesn't get traded, Belmar's gone. It's that simple.
So we'll know like June 21st-ish.
Yeah. Next, Ryan Carpenter. This one shouldn't take long. He's gone.
Yeah, I don't see him coming back.
Yeah, Ken had him re-signing.
So... I guess like I can see it if you are looking for some depth, but I mean, this is a guy that didn't find himself in the lineup from Gerard Gallant in a series that was custom built for Ryan Carpenter.
He put, to me, that game seven, his Gallant's decision to put Brandon Peary in over Carpenter, and he even mentioned that Gusev was a thought over Carpenter, who we've all said is his guy, right? Like, we've all said how much he loves
Trusts
Ryan
him,
Carpenter.
Likes him?
He doesn't like him as much as we thought he did.
Yeah,
I agree. I'm Ryan Carpenter, it's like, I think there are teams out there that can use him, and he can be an every night player like he was in the regular season for Vegas. And if you're the Golden Knights, you're pressed against the cap, you need to unload some money. By not signing him, like, how much worse is it? Like, say some guys get hurt, and the situation where you were going to use Carpenter, you use Daniel Carr or Brooks Masek Gage Quinney or any of those guys down there. Like, I don't think it's that much of a difference, so you can save yourself some money by not signing him.
No, I agree with you 100%. I don't think Carpenter's back. So what do I say? Belmar depends, but I think right now I'm leaning toward an Eakin trade and Belmar gets re-signed. And Brandon Peary's not back. That's where I'm at, I think, right now.
And then the last UFA, is Derek Englund, which to me is the most interesting one.
It's interesting. Okay, well, here's my thought. Because I chatted a little bit yesterday with Ken just about his article and kind of where I stand. With Derek Englund, he's not an 82-game player. He's simply not. Yeah. I don't think that he's an 82-game player. I also don't think he's a top-pairing defenseman. I think he's...
You're definitely not a
top-pairing defenseman. He's a 5-6-7 at best. Like, that's where he would be in my depth chart. So, to me, you've got a lot of young talent in the AHL that I think is ready to make the jump to the NHL, mm-hmm. that's going to make you more mobile, that's going to make you cheaper, but better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would rather see that spot go to like a Nick Hague. I'd rather see that spot go to a Jimmy Schultz, so that they can get a year under their belt so that they can start that next wave of young defense. That being said, I'm very aware of what Derek Englund means to this community. George McPhee is very aware of what Derek Englund means to this community. I would be fine with Englund resigning under the pretense that he's a 55 to 60 game player.
Max, that's too much.
And I say 55 to 60, I mean like 50 to 55.
I mean like 30 to 40.
See, I'm with you there, but I don't think that that's going to happen.
I think England signs for $1 million, one more year, and he's that.
As an 82?
Yeah. No. Oh, as like a 30 to 40 game guy. He can be... Now, if injuries
is he in your game one?
That's the thing. If round one lineup? If two defensemen go down with an injury in the first week of the season, all of a sudden England's back to playing like normal, right? I don't think they're going to... Because England wants to play. I talked to England. Everybody talked to England.
Yeah.
He is 100... In his mind, he's coming back and he's playing for this team. Asked him, would you entertain playing for somewhere out of Vegas? He was not a fan of that question.
Most people aren't a fan of your questions. Well, I guess here's my question. I imagine George McPhee goes to Derek Englund and he's like, Derek, we'll re-sign you, but this is your management plan. Like, this is... We're looking at bringing in some young guys. We're looking at kind of moving in a different direction after this season. We'd love you to be a part of it, but you're only going to play 40 games.
Yeah, Derek, you had the worst Corsi of any Vegas defenseman at 50.15, and your scoring chances against while you were on the ice was higher than any player on the team.
Okay. Does Derek Englund sign that contract,
yes,
knowing he's a 40-game guy, or does he go somewhere else to play as an 82-game player?
No. If there is a contract on the table in Vegas, he takes it.
Do you think there's a do you think anybody else is going to give him a contract?
I think they may.
There will be offers.
I think they may, but I think to him it's the only way he would play somewhere else is if Vegas simply doesn't offer him a contract. And even then, I think he still might retire over going somewhere else.
Right.
Even though he definitely wants to play.
I will say Derek Englund is back only if he is a seventh defenseman.
Yeah, I think he's back. If you had me predict right now, I think he's back.
All right, so
RFAs.
Now the hard stuff.
Well, let's get the... I'm not going to go in the order of my story. Let's get the quick ones out of the way. Tomáš Nosek.
I expected so much more from him this
year. Everybody did.
Like, he had an opportunity to become an integral part of this team, and I don't think that he did that at all last year. And I could see him becoming a player that is used to sweeten the pot on a trade.
Yeah. I think they give him his qualifying offer, which is going to be like $1 million.
Yep.
It's going to be nothing. He is arbitration eligible. He's not going to get much in arbitration considering he scored 8 goals this season.
Brandon Peary did that in like a week.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Nosek scored 7 goals last year, and we were like, all right, this is the big step. And we were right. He made a huge step he got 8 goals instead of 7. And instead of 15 points, he recorded 17 points.
Man, remember how he looked in camp?
We thought he was going to be a top 6 guy. Put him next to Stastny and Pacioretty.
Yeah. How wrong we were.
And have Halla and Tuck on the third line.
Yeah.
Oh, those were the days. So Nosek, I think he gets qualifying offer. If he goes to arbitration, cool. I could see him being waived out of training camp and the Golden Knights say, hey, anyone want to pick up this contract? If not, he goes to the AHL and doesn't count against your cap. So it's like, I think Nosek's either gone or waived to, I could see him being waived to the AHL and claimed or sent or just sent down.
Yeah, I don't know that he's with the team on the main roster to start the year. And it sucks because you see the potential with him.
Yeah, I don't anymore. I've seen enough. Well, it's not coming.
No, well, here's my thing. With Tomasz Nosek, I think he needs to be a center. I don't think he can play the wing effectively. I think he can be a center. And I think he could be a good center. I don't think he's going to be great. I don't think you're looking top six, but he's a bottom six center.
Yeah. I mean, he's like a below average bottom six center.
But
Joe Thornton, even this year, he's a bottom six center that you're afraid of. Like, oh shit, we're playing against the Sharks. They've got Joe Thornton in the bottom six. Tomasz Nosek is, oh, thank God, we're playing against him in the bottom six.
But like, the question is,
below average.
Tomasz Nosek is a bottom six center on a team that has really good bottom six centers, no matter how you slice it. Yeah. If you keep Cody Eakin, he's your fourth line center. Nosek's not beating him out. Eric Halla, not happening. Yeah.
He's not better than Belmar.
He's not better than Belmar. So it's a situation where I think Tomasz Nosek can be valuable to some other team in the league as a center. And I think he'll, like, when Nosek is not a Golden Knight, inevitably, he will join a team. He will become a bottom six center, and he'll probably score more than 8 goals, and he'll probably have more than 17 points.
And Tyler Bischoff will tweet about it.
And Tyler's going to be like, Tomasz Nosek won the trade. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, not really. It just was never going to work out here because he's not better than Halla, Eakin, Belmar, anyone else.
Yeah, and Glass is knocking on the door to come up, and he's going to quick. Like, this team is stacked at center.
So yeah, that's where I'm at with Tomasz Nosek. Right. I think he could be a part of a trade. I do think he'll get the qualifying offer, and you know, we'll go from there.
Next, Jimmy Schultz.
I mean, he chose Vegas, right?
Yeah, to me, that's why this one can be pretty quick. Like, he's gonna
clearly
sign.
Going to sign
like a 3-4 year deal.
The question is, where does he play next year? Is he in line for a year of AHL seasoning? Or is Jimmy Schultz going to hold a little bit of leverage over the Golden Knights and be like, hey, there were other teams that wanted me, and I know that I could have played for them year one in the NHL. Like, I need a little bit here. That's the question that I have. It's not Jimmy Schultz be a Golden Knight. It's will Jimmy Schultz play in the AHL, or will he be in the NHL?
I think, to me, there's going to be one spot open on the defense for one of those guys, whether it's Hague, Whitecloud, Schultz, maybe Coughlin can surprise us. I can't not mention Bischoff.
No, you can. You can.
So
I don't even mention it on his show.
I think there's one spot open, not two. Now, if England retires, now I think there's two, but I think there's going to be one spot open, and it's just going to be a fight for it in training camp, in rookie development camp and in training camp. And I think Hague is better than Schultz. So if you told me, I think Schultz ends up in the AHL because Hague. Now, a couple guys go down, Schultz the first guy up. He could be, and then he impresses, and he could be, like, I'm not saying he's going to be in the AHL all season for sure, but I think he starts in the AHL because I think Hague is better.
You think they go 8D or 7?
7.
7?
I think they go 7 now.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, for me, Jimmy Schultz signing.
All right. Next, Nikita Gusev.
He's clearly signing.
Clearly signing.
He's clearly going to be a big piece of the third line, or you could see a situation in which he finds himself in the top six if there needs to be a bigger trade that needs to happen in order for William Karlsson to be re-signed.
Yeah, I agree. I think he gets a 4 or 5 year deal. Maybe a little shorter if he wants to, because he's not going to get the huge payday because we haven't seen him in the NHL yet. So he's going to probably, I'm going to guess he's probably going to make about $3 million a year, maybe $4 million a year.
So,
but he wants to make
4 by 12.
Yeah, something like that.
12 over 4, like that.
But maybe he says, no, I want a 2 year deal, and I'm going to kill it for these two seasons, and then I want $7 million, which if I was Gusev and I was confident in my ability, that's what I would want.
Sure.
So we'll see. But I think it's going to be in that $3 to $4 million a year range, and then the length, we'll just see what he wants and what the Golden Knights want. So But yeah, we both agree he's going to be a big part of it. He's coming back. He wouldn't have rushed over here and given up all those bonuses like he did if he didn't fully intend on signing with the Golden Knights.
Yeah, that's the biggest takeaway from Nikita Gusev, from what we have heard of him. He wants to be in the NHL, period. And he came over to be a Golden Knight. He wants to be a Golden Knight. I expect that he will try to set himself up for one big payday in his NHL career.
Yeah.
And that's, I could see a 2-year deal. I could see a little bit of a bridge there and just playing for that next contract.
Yeah. And he could have not come over for the playoffs. He could have waited until the playoffs ended and then come over, and he would have been old enough to not be an RFA anymore. So he would have played next season under his entry level deal, the $925,000, and then he would have became a UFA and been able to choose whatever team he wanted. So he gave up that right.
Right.
In order, like, intentionally. He came over here intentionally in order to get that UFA year, I mean, his entry level contract year out of the way, and now he can sign long term. So he's clearly signing long term with the Golden Knights. Otherwise, doing that would have made no sense.
Gusev, Hala, Tuck, your third line next year?
That sounds good to me. That's phenomenal. That's probably the best third line in hockey. Now, like we said, all of offseason, I tried to say it all of offseason. I was like, you guys, we're making all these lines. They're going to get hurt, and it's not going to be that way. And then that's exactly what happened, because it's hockey, and they're going to get hurt. So, yeah, right now, you look at these lines, and it's like Marchessault, Carlson, Smith, Pacioretty, Stastny, Stone, Hala, Eakin. I mean, Hala, Tuck, Gusev, Eakin. It's the most ridiculous thing ever, and you're like, this team's going to go 82-0 and win the cup. But then, like, four of them are going to get hurt in training camp, and it's going to be, like, that's just how it's going to work. Yeah, so yeah. I don't want to get too excited with these lines, but yes, that, I mean, if that's your third line, you're in damn good shape.
So I've got a hypothetical for you, but we'll do it after we do the rest of the RFAs.
Okay, we've got two more.
Yep.
My favorite, my personal favorite, Malcolm Subban.
Malcolm Subban will be back.
Yes, he will.
I don't think that he's going to, he'll get the qualifying offer. I don't know that there's any reason for him not to sign it, but I don't know. He might just want to go to arbitration. It's fine. But
either way, he's going to end up getting.
I think it's maybe a million, 1.2 million, like, is what he's looking at. And
it's going to be cheap for Subban.
It's not going to be anything that's going to break the bank. And you're looking at a guy that's going to want to improve on what he did this year. You're looking at a guy that I think believes he can start one day in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm Subban, we've talked about it on this podcast multiple times. Malcolm Subban is not the goalie of the future for the Golden Knights.
Yeah, it's tough timing. Well, the decision on Malcolm Subban, the big decision, like right now, they're facing the big decision with William Karlsson.
Right.
That decision for Malcolm Subban comes next season, because he's either going to sign the qualifying offer, he's going to go to arbitration, he's going to have a year deal, basically. Right. And then next offseason, that's when it gets interesting, because it's going to be, Subban is going to, at that point, to me, like, I asked him at Locker Cleaner Day, when do you want to be the guy?
Right.
How important is that? Like, you want to learn a bunch from Fleury and Pryor, and this has helped your career. Think about where he was when Boston released him. Like, this has helped his career so much, so you don't mind doing that. But at some point, I'm 26. I want to play. Right. I want to be the guy. I want to earn that contract that can pay for the rest of your life, right? You need one big contract. When do you want to start earning that? I think next offseason, it's going to be the decision, okay, is Subban good enough to be the franchise goalie? And if so, you're going to have to pay him, and that means Fleury's done. But if Fleury's awesome next year, then you say, okay, sorry, Subban, you can go play somewhere else. So,
and you'll have two more years at $7 million for Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yep.
So that's, I'm just going to put it out here right now. I don't see this organization choosing Malcolm Subban over Marc-Andre Fleury.
I don't either. So he's probably gone after next year.
Next year, he's probably gone. The question, I guess, is if that's the case, is he trade bait at the deadline? Like, do you use Malcolm Subban at the deadline if he has a pretty good year to get some assets?
I could see that. It all depends on how he plays and how Fleury plays. Fleury, in order to trade Malcolm Subban, Fleury has got to be phenomenal. Because if Fleury is showing any signs of aging or any questions as to how good he's going to be for the next few years, you can't let go of Subban because Subban's the next guy in line. You need him. So it's like we're the good thing is they're going to have Subban this year. He's going to be cheap, and they're going to get a whole year of evaluating him and Fleury and being able to decide what they want to do. So it's like, well, it's just a wait and see. Like, I don't want to try to predict it because Fleury could be great. Fleury could get old like Jonathan Quick did this year. Like, it happens quick. Remember, Jonathan Quick was freaking Superman against the Golden Knights in the first round of the playoffs. And then this year, he was a just flaming dumpster. Like, it was just a absolute natural disaster.
Here's a question for you. Here's a question for you. Because it just popped up into my mind as I'm looking at Cap Friendly and seeing Marc-Andre Fleury's 3-year contract extension for $21 million. Do you think that that number would have been $7 million if Marc-Andre Fleury signed an extension this offseason as opposed to last offseason?
Nope.
What do you think it would have been after
less.
This year?
A lot less.
Significantly, like 5?
Under 6, I think, yeah. That's what happens when you sign a guy GMs off of an amazing playoff run. The thing is, they are the reason. Well, Fleury, too. Fleury's to blame, too, because he's the one that wants to play every damn day. But that's the reason he wasn't good down the stretch. I don't want to hear it anymore from Ken or from anyone. They played him too much. Stop doing it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's to me, it's amazing that there are even people on the other side of this argument. And like George McPhee got up there and said, I don't think it's because he played him too much. Either he's lying or he doesn't understand. And I think George McPhee's really smart, so I don't think he doesn't understand. I think he's lying. They played him too much. Now, they learn and play Subban one out of every 4 games all season long?
Well, it depends on if they start the year 8-11-1.
That's like that's idiotic. That's, nope, that I don't care. I don't care if they start the season 0-20.
I'm not arguing with you. Yeah. I'm saying that this organization needs to make the playoffs.
It's
like
idiotic.
they have put expectations so high after their first year, their second year, that this is a team that needs to make the playoffs.
You need to make the playoffs and, while playing Malcolm Subban.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. The question
and the
is,
thought that you can't is wrong.
You're you and I are on the same side of the fence here. I think Malcolm Subban is more than adequate when it comes to backup goalies in the NHL right now. I mean, he had a better save percentage. He had better numbers than Martin Jones. Martin Jones, the starter. Like, let's just put all that to bed. That all being said, Malcolm Subban, he's going to be cheap. It'll be for at least one more year. And then, like you said, the organization has a lot of questions to answer when it comes to Malcolm Subban. I don't see it working out in his favor to be the next wave for the Golden Knights. I think Malcolm Subban will be a starter on another team.
I agree.
And at that point, you hope that he does well. And you hope that the Golden Knights have figured out who the next guy is. Because 3 more years of Marc-Andre Fleury is going to go by pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that you're going to extend him at the end of 3 years.
Yeah. By the way, anyone who doesn't follow me on Twitter that listens to this, I just need to, like, I just can't get enough of these stats. The 8 starting goalies remaining in the Stanley Cup playoffs, now that we're down to 8 teams.
Yep.
2 of them finished in the top 20 in starts.
There's nothing to see there.
The average number of starts for the final 8 goalies is 46.3. That's just over half of the games in a season.
Yep.
I'm telling you, I've been saying it since the beginning of the season, since last year. In the NFL, the way that NFL teams handle running backs, there's no longer a top running back that gets 30 carries a game. Everyone splits them to keep everyone fresh. That will be the norm in the NHL. It's just taking teams longer to figure it out than they should. I'm not saying Fleury needs to play 41 and Subban needs to play 41, but Fleury should play 50 and Subban should play 32. It should be that close to even. But it won't be. And it wasn't this year. And what do you know? Fleury wasn't great in the playoffs. He got hurt down the stretch, and it wasn't like he got hurt because a guy ran into him and he got a major injury. What happened? He just wasn't feeling good one day. And then it held him out.
Dare I say overuse injuries?
Maybe his body's just breaking down because they played him 60 games. And then he gets back in the playoffs. And like, that's the other thing is like, everyone's like, well, see, you, Jesse, you said he needed a rest. He got a rest and now he's back. But you don't just take 2 weeks off and then come back and be 100% fresh and be sharp in the playoffs. And he wasn't sharp in the playoffs.
William Karlsson.
Stop playing him so much. Karlsson.
William Karlsson probably wants $7 million a year, right?
Yeah.
Golden Knights probably want closer to five.
Probably.
I think William Karlsson needs to be your second line center next year.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to move the Stastny, Pacioretty, Stone lineup
Stastny,
to one.
So Stastny, Pacioretty is your top line. Like, let's not stand on any ceremony. Like, going to be the top line. So I think this team.
Well, they're paid like the top line. They're paid $23 million bucks between them. They better be the damn top line.
So William Karlsson to me needs to be your second line center.
Yep.
It's the only thing that makes sense. He's phenomenal on both ends of the ice. Yes, he didn't score 43 goals this year. He's probably never going to score 43 goals again.
I think he scores more next year than he did this year.
Oh, I do too. I think William Karlsson is about a 30-goal, 65-point player.
I agree.
Which, as a second-line center, is basically what you want.
And he gives you all the other stuff. The penalty killing. He plays power play. He plays penalty kill. He's the best defensive forward on the team, other than maybe Mark Stone. He does everything, and he's never missed a game.
No, he's an Iron Man.
180-something games in a row he hasn't missed.
And so I think you do whatever you need to do to sign William Karlsson. Now, it has to make sense for the team. I get that. I understand it. But I feel like it's going to be somewhere in the middle. And I'm looking at maybe like a 4 to 5 year deal. Somewhere around $5.5-6 million.
4 years is good for Karlsson because it makes him a free agent while he's young enough to get a massive deal if he's good for these 4 years. Whereas if it's a six-year deal, Karlsson, when he becomes a free agent after that deal, he's now on the downside.
Right.
And that difference in 2 years makes a huge difference because look at what James Neal and David Perron were looking at making in the free agency, and look what the 28-year-olds were looking at making. Like, it's a huge difference you hit that 30 number.
Yeah.
So I agree that William Karlsson probably wants a four-year deal. That would make the most sense because he realizes, okay, I didn't score 43 goals again. If William Karlsson scored 43 goals again, I want 8 years. Sure. I want the match. He didn't cash in on that. So I think in Karlsson's mind, it's like, okay, it's time to make good money because right now he's not making anything. Like, it's like he's way underpaid. So it's like, let's make okay money with a chance to make my big money in 4 years.
The question is, could the Golden Knights get away with, like, if Karlsson wants a 4 year deal, then the Golden Knights can probably bring that average annual value down a little bit. But if they start buying some of those later years, they're going to have to increase that. So what is it that matters most to the Golden Knights right now? Is it the idea that they might have to pay William Karlsson more down the road, or the idea that someone else is going to pay him in free agency to bring that cap hit down? Or do they see him as a 7 year player, 8 year player, and they're willing to buy a little bit more with the average annual value? I think that's kind of the big question, and that's the one that'll get answered by George McPhee.
Yeah, the super interesting thing here to me, this is the most fascinating storyline of the offseason, and I'm going to be glued to it all offseason. This is like my favorite part of the offseason to me. And one of the most fascinating things is we can't forget, he's still an RFA, and he's still arbitration eligible. The Golden Knights, if they really wanted to, if George McPhee really wants to, he can force William Karlsson to file for arbitration and get a one-year deal. Another one-year deal. Now, if you do that, you're going to get him for cheaper because his arbitration is probably going to go down from what they... Remember, last year they awarded him, what was it, 5.25? 5.75?
I'll check on it.
So last year, William Karlsson filed for arbitration and got what he got. That was after a 43-goal season. If McPhee forces Carlson to go to arbitration.
525.
He will get, there's no way he's getting a raise from 525. So
I
let's
think so.
So say he gets 5 million. The Golden Knights could actually get William Carlson for cheaper next year than they did this year. Now, here's why that sounds like a great option, right? We're in cap hell. We're trying to figure it out. We're having to lose people just to keep him. Let's get him for as cheap as possible. What happens if you do that is William, that will be William Carlson's last season as a Golden Knight. 100%
chance. Is there
chance.
Any concern that William Carlson could be the target of an offer sheet?
I don't think so. Because I think the Golden Knights are willing to pay him up until it gets to the really high offer sheets where nobody's given 3 first-round picks for William Carlson. You'd have to be an idiot and all that money. So I think the Golden Knights are willing to pay him enough to keep that from happening. I will say, if McPhee goes this route and forces William Carlson to file for arbitration and they get and he gets $5 million a year or $5 million next year, he becomes a UFA after that, I would bet every penny in my bank account William Carlson doesn't play another game as a Golden Knight past that season.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
If you're
with
William
that.
Carlson, you watch Marchessault get his deal immediately, right when the team, like in the middle of last year. Nate Schmidt gets a deal right after getting suspended for steroids and missing 20 games. Mark Stone gets traded and signs a deal hours later. Max Pacioretty gets traded, signs a deal hours later. Paul Stastny gets paid. Colin Miller gets paid. Shea Theodore gets paid. Alex Tuch gets paid. Meanwhile, I haven't missed a single game, and I've been the most solid, consistent player in this franchise's history, and I can't get money, and they're using the system against him.
It's almost like he's been punished for having a really good year.
Yeah.
Which is kind of ass backwards.
Yes.
Like, you know his worth as a player.
Yeah.
And you know you're not getting 43 goals. That's fine. You don't need 43 goals. When you do everything
because if he's getting 43 goals,
he's a
$13 million a year player.
Right, exactly.
Which, which
clearly
he's not.
You don't have room for that.
Yeah.
But it's the... I think William Carlson signs a 4-year deal.
I think it's something like that. I don't want to make a prediction on the deal, but I do think it needs to be a long-term deal. The best thing for the Golden Knights financially is to go to arbitration, but that means he's gone. And you can't do that to a player who's been
so
this
if that
consistent.
Means he's gone, and you look at the Golden Knights right now, and they're in cap hell. Why not move on from William Carlson?
That means Cody Glass better be pretty damn good next season. They don't have a second line center. Eric Halla is below average second line center. He's a way above average first line center.
I agree with you. Now, here's the thought on Eric Halla. I'm firmly in the you need to keep William Carlson. He needs to be your second line center camp. I think that he's just great. I love everything that he does. His game's phenomenal. That all being said, on the topic of Eric Halla, you've seen what this team is with Eric Halla. You've seen what this team can be without Eric Halla. If Cody Glass starts in the AHL next year, and if Cody Glass dominates the AHL, which he should.
He has been. He's been playing really, really well in the playoffs. And
he should
end of the regular
continue
season.
That, because I'm sure he's going to start there. If you feel confident in Cody Glass becoming your third line center, do you trade Eric Halla at the deadline?
I think Halla could be traded this offseason. I don't think it's that likely because I think you don't want to trade a guy after an injury because his value is lower than it should be.
You give him a chance.
But Eric Halla's got one season remaining and you're going to have to pay him after that, and I don't think they can.
So.
And that's the other thing. It's like, okay, trade William Carlson because you've got Eric Halla. You're going to have to pay Eric Halla next year.
Yeah,
so now you're paying for a lesser player.
And you're like,
and you're going to pay him close to what you're paying Carlson.
Yeah. No, I firmly believe that William Carlson needs to be signed, period. And I think that the Golden Knights would do themselves a service to get it relatively longer deal because he's only going to get better.
Yeah,
to me, he's only going to get better.
I agree.
But the question is, how the hell do they fit his contract into this team right now? If we're sold on small deals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cody Eakin's got to go.
Yep.
Right? Eakin, Ryan Reeves has to go?
Eakin, Reeves, Miller, Holden. Not all of them, but two or three of those have to be gone, and maybe Holla.
The question is, Miller or Theodore?
Oh, Miller.
Because you get more from Theodore.
Way more.
You open up the door a little bit more for some of the young guys in Jimmy Schultz, in Nick Hague, to find themselves a part of this team.
Theodore's the second best defenseman on the team behind Nate Schmidt. And in a year or two, he could be the best defenseman on the team.
I understand that.
Like, I think we sometimes I think Shea Theodore is going to get a lot better.
I like him.
Think of what age Nate Schmidt was when he became the shutdown defenseman.
But I also think Shea Theodore gets you significantly more than Colin Miller does.
Yeah.
And if you can create an opening on defense for some of these young guys to move into that spot, and you continue to get better because you get more in a trade for Shea Theodore, I don't know that you don't entertain it.
Yeah, but what you're getting in a trade for Shea Theodore has to be futures because you can't take on the salary. The whole reason you're doing the trade is to dump salary. So, like, if you trade Shea Theodore, you could get a phenomenal player, but that guy's going to cost, right? And, like,
you can get better picks.
Picks and prospects. Shea Theodore.
You can get better prospects
makes you better
for Shea Theodore.
That makes you better in 4 years.
It makes you better in, like, two.
You've got to overcook them, though.
If it was any other organization. Jesus Christ. So, give me, and we're like up against it, because apparently we've got to do the insider show today. And we haven't gotten anything in the mailbag, so everyone's going to be mad at us.
Thanks for asking those questions that we completely ignored.
We'll do another episode next week where we try to answer all those questions. If there was anything that we didn't get to, don't yell at us. It's hard enough for us to get into a studio to do these, let alone actually, like, you know, listen and read your questions. But I guess kind of the big thing is, it almost feels like there's going to be something big that happens with this team in the offseason. And not like it was last year where you get Paul Stastny, you acquire Max Pacioretty. Like, it doesn't seem like it's going to be an addition. It almost feels like it's going to be a subtraction. So do you think it's going to be a series of minor deals like Cody Eakin, like Nick Holden, like Colin Miller, like Ryan Reeves? Or do you think it's plausible you're looking at somebody from your top six moving on?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be smaller deals, in my opinion. I mean, this is just a guess. I mean, we're so far out. Like, even the people who give me information, the people they get the information from, don't know yet.
Yeah.
So this is not any inside information that will come later, like much later. I don't know anything right now. I'm just completely guessing. I think it's smaller deals with Eakin, possibly Miller, Reeves, Holden, Gusev. I could see Gusev getting traded. I think it's smaller deals like that. I don't see a Riley Smith, Pacioretty, somebody like that. I don't see that happening.
You went right to Pacioretty.
Well, I'm just saying top six guys with big contracts.
I hear you.
I mean, who else? Like, Marchessault, Smith, Pacioretty. Obviously, Stone's not getting traded. I mean,
probably not. I think he's good.
I think the top six are pretty safe.
I think so too. I throw Tuck in there.
He's one that's in the middle.
See, I throw him in there because I think that he can still get better.
Oh, of course. And that deal's cheap.
And there's a lot that was left on the table, I think, with when he went down to the third line to play with Cody Eakin and nobody else.
Like, yep.
There's only so much he can do there.
Yeah.
With Holla and Gusev, presumably he should be very, very good next year.
Yeah, and I think you don't want to trade Tuck because you're looking to move on from big contracts, and his is one of the few on the team that's an absolute steal.
Yeah,
like, that's a very, very cheap contract for what he's going to do. So that's one that you don't want to move on from.
Anything else you got?
No, I don't think so.
Dust is finally cleared.
Yeah, we're in off-season mode.
God, it's nice a little bit.
Yeah.
Extra time, free time.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice for me with, you know, like the two other jobs.
Yeah. I don't have those.
All right. Well, I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. Also of note, VGK Insider Show will continue 5 days a week through the NHL awards and I believe free agency. So through July, 5 days a week, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. With Frank Harnish. So that's where you can see and hear and find me terrorizing Frank at RV parks and stuff like that. So it's fun. Jesse, where can people find your stuff and how can they save money?
Yeah. So at Jesse Granger _ on Twitter, at theathletic.com. And if you haven't subscribed to The Athletic, I assume that most people listening to this probably are subscribers because if you like me enough to listen to this every day, you probably like me enough to subscribe. But if you haven't, if you're one of the few that it's holding out, they have given me my special code. So you can subscribe through The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/Granger. If you use that,
no underscore,
you'll get no underscore, just slash Granger. You will get 40% off. It's like $2.99 a month. That's super cheap. I mean, you're like, that's $2.99 in a month. That's one coffee that you didn't buy that one morning per month to get The Athletic. And also, if you do it that way, it gives me credit for the subscription, so it helps me out. So I would appreciate it very much. Thank you.
They couldn't do Suck It Granger?
No, they wouldn't do that. I didn't ask, but I don't think
so
they would have.
It's still a possibility.
You're right. It's up in the air. I didn't know.
All right. So we are going to do our best to get back in the studio next week to get to your mailbag questions. We will send out another tweet about it, and then you'll send us questions, and we probably won't even answer those. So thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the podcast. We really appreciate it. And we will talk to you next time. Yeah, dude, the Beyond Burger at Carl's is not the best vegan burger to start with.
Dude, it grossed me out.
Yeah, well, Impossible's good. Like, I'll take you to a place up north.
Yeah.
Like, that shit's... Like, I've had really good Beyond Burgers at Carl's, and I've had some of the worst.
Gotcha. Beyond Burgers. Yeah, the texture was weird.
Yeah, they probably didn't, like, actually cook it correctly.